Before we get into today's episode, we wanted to tell you about SV Pod, hosted by Scott Van Pelt alongside Stanford Steve. This podcast brings you high-level sports analysis as well as stories as two dads raising kids, plus find out every Tuesday what they hate and see if you agree. That's SV Pod. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there is a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinne Agumike, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelbourne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That is my man, Ryan Clark. Ryan, thank you for coming back, my friend. We missed you last week.
Missed you, brother.
It was hard. It was tough, my guy.
You did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, guys, coming up in this show, the GOAT, Amanda Nunes, my friend, my good friend Amanda Nunes, stops by. Even though Ryan tries to drive a wedge between us, we're also going to talk about
UFC 269. Excuse me, DC, I don't mean to cut you off. Stop lying to the people. I don't try to drive a wedge between you and anyone. The UFC and the MMA world understands me and respects the fact that I support everyone. There is no hate, DC. You know, when if I would get into the octagon after the fight, I would remember everyone's name. Every time we talk about Amanda Nunes, oh, Kayla Harrison's better than her. Juliana Pena is going to beat her.
Forget people's name. What you talking about? Forget people's name. Right. Wait a minute. I missed when you said that. And then all of a sudden it hit me. Like, wait a minute. Wait, so nothing's off limits?
Oh, my bad, man. My bad. You're right. I got to stop. I have to make sure.
You as bad as Conor McGregor trying to get me fired. Like, so now y'all working together to try to get me fired. I didn't forget Sean Brady's name. I know Sean Brady's name right now, Ryan Clark. But guess what, though? Ryan Clark, I was in there last weekend.
Okay.
Had every name.
You did?
One that I didn't forget, that I would never forget, is the King of Rio, Jose Aldo Jr. Mm. Boy, let me tell you something, Doug. This dude put on a performance Saturday night, man. And to think that he's been around for as long as he has to still be able to fight at that level, unbelievable.
You know what, DC? It was one of those strange things for me. You talked about how good Rob Font was. I think going back, we were talking about this weight class a while ago at bantamweight, and you were saying, you know, people kind of underestimate who Rob Font is. And when I watched this fight, Rob Font was getting off first a few times, and he was landing more strikes, and I felt like he was the more active fighter. There was actually some time where he had cage control, but then every time Jose Aldo landed a strike, every time he touched Rob Font, you could see the difference in the power. You could see the difference in the effect. And I think that's what's been the most telling thing to me about Jose Aldo at fighting at bantamweight, was once he kind of understood the cut, once he understood the stamina that it would take, that he could last into the late rounds and what pace he could fight at, he's truly been at some of his best in these last two fights. And to watch him affect Rob Font on the feet the way he did with his hands, and then understand the takedown in the ground game and have the ground control he had in the fourth and the fifth round, it was truly an amazing performance. But where do you see Jose Aldo going from here, DC? Is there a route to a championship for
him? Well, yes, there is. And Piotr Jan beat him the first time. But you got to remember, that was the first time he fought at 135. Mm-hmm. So it's an understanding of getting your body down to where you're supposed to fight. And that was a great point about the pace that he can fight at.
Right.
Because he doesn't have to match the pace of Piotr Jan like he tried to do in the first fight. Because the first three rounds is very competitive. Mm-hmm. But then he got fatigued and Piotr finished him. Now he understands the weight cut. He understands how to fight at 135. There is a route. And the route is through TJ Dillashaw.
Okay.
He's going to have to find a way to fight TJ Dillashaw. Now, what impressed me the most on Saturday was that Aldo is showing his entire game. Mm-hmm. He's not just trying to stand and kick. He's right. kicking. He's fighting behind the beautiful jabs. He started working with the Brazilian Marines, the Brazil Marine team, the boxing team. Crazy how effective he is with his hands. But it was the jab that he throws so beautifully now. Then when that right hand, when he would let that right hand go, Rob Font was going flying.
Every single
across
time.
Across the octagon.
Right.
Every time he hit him, he would make him fly across the octagon. And then I love when Andre Pettinaris told him in the third round, now give me some kicks, it'll open up the hands.
Mm-hmm.
Dude start blasting kicks, boom, boom, boom. Now Rob Font's legs are damaged a little bit.
Right.
So he's a much more willing target. I thought it was beautiful. And Ryan, very rarely am I starstruck mm-hmm. or enamored with the athlete
right.
in fighting. I don't get like that anymore. I've been in the game too long. But Jose Aldo, every single time. Every time he walks out to Rihanna,
mm-hmm.
and every, you know the song,
run
right?
This town.
You know the song.
Yeah.
You run this town because his walkout is iconic. Every time I take my phone out of video, I'm in the octagon talking to him, and I'm like touching him. I'm like, man, this is Jose Aldo. Like, for all that he's done. And I remember the moment we started doing this, you had this, like, you almost held him up on the pedestal. And to see him still doing this, man, he deserves to be there. Because that wasn't very long ago what people thought the dude was done.
Right. And, you know, you watch, like I told you, and I've said this on this show for multiple times, Jose Aldo was the first little man I was ever scared of. Right. He was the first dude that I was like, hey, you know what? Like, this dude's 135, 145, and I don't want none of it. You know, just explosive. And I remember back then, it was always the calf kicks that scared me. I was mm-hmm. like, how are you going to fight a dude that's that explosive with his feet and with his hands? And when he came over to the UFC, he came over with that reputation. Okay, this is the champ. This is the baddest man at that size. And he reigned in the UFC at the beginning of his tenure here too. But another guy who's a huge UFC name is TJ Dillashaw. So the prospects of that fight, one, does that fight excite you? Two, does mm-hmm. that fight make sense? And three, will it happen?
You know, honestly, for me, RC, it's very exciting. Like, I could only imagine. Because there was a time where these guys held the titles at different weight classes.
Yeah,
where Aldo was the 45-pound champ. Dillashaw was the bantamweight champ.
Mm-hmm.
So it excites me. But does it make sense? Not necessarily for TJ. TJ, after beating Corey Sandhagen, was almost guaranteed the next shot. If Aljamain Sterling and Piotr Jan didn't fight the way that last one ended, TJ would probably be scheduled to fight for the belt, if not for injury. So for TJ, I don't know if I'm like saying, hey, give me Jose Aldo, when it seems like he is the next guy.
Right.
But for Aldo, it makes absolute sense. It's like, give me the next best guy
mm-hmm.
that, knowing if I beat him, there is no denying, because now he has beaten Chito Vera, who looked phenomenal against Frankie Edgar.
Yep.
He has beaten Pedro Munhoz, who's fighting against Dominic Cruz this weekend. And now he has beaten
Rob Font.
Rob Font last weekend,
mm-hmm.
who was working his way up the bantamweight ranking. So he's three in a row now. You put TJ Dillashaw behind that at number three ranked Jose Aldo. How could you deny him a championship fight?
Yeah, and I think, though, when you look at Jose Aldo, he has to understand, too. I remember it was, what, two fights ago, we were talking about Jose Aldo and asking, was he the gatekeeper? Was he going to be the guy that the young cats had to beat in order to get into title contention? And now he wins that fight, and then we see him beat Rob Font. If I'm him, I'm pushing for the TJ Dillashaw matchup, but you're absolutely correct. If you're TJ Dillashaw, you say, okay, I came
I'm
out, I beat the Sandman. Right, I understood that I would be
who was number
next,
one at the time.
Was number one
who
at the time.
Was number one at the time.
Right, and you're right. The only reason he's not fighting Piotr Jan now is because of the way that the Aljo Sterling fight ended the first time.
Yeah.
And he has to get his opportunity. One, he's a champion still. He has to get mm-hmm. his opportunity to defend his belt against the interim champ. What I want to see, though, is if TJ Dillashaw says, you know what? It's a fight I want to take because the people want to see it. It's a fight I want to take as I'm waiting for something to happen. You've been a fighter, DC. You fought your entire life. You wrestled your entire life. Is that something that you think entices him? Is the money enough? Mm-hmm. Is the opportunity enough to take a chance on fighting someone as explosive as Jose Aldo?
So I think it's different for TJ Dillashaw, right? Because remember, when his suspension started, he was the champion. He was the bantamweight champion. It's not like he was a guy that was ranked highly and pursuing the belt. He was the champ when he left.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, it's like title or nothing.
Okay.
And I can see that being the reason why he goes, why do I need the Aldo fight?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need the Aldo fight. And plus, Aldo's smart knowing that if it takes another one, because of the way the Piotr Jan fight
right.
ended with them the first time, beating TJ Dillashaw after Rob Font and all these other guys, it makes absolute sense. Now, again, it's all a big jumble at the top of the division because of the way that first fight ended.
Absolutely.
But after watching TJ beat Corey Sandhagen, mm-hmm. and then Corey Sandhagen fighting as valiantly as he did against Piotr Jan in Abu Dhabi,
right.
it's like there's excitement in this division.
True.
There's a bit of a jumble because Aljo is the champion.
And we're waiting
on
him.
And so many believe that Piotr Jan is the best.
Right.
Right. So it makes for a very weird situation. But if those guys get matched up in the first quarter of the year, Sterling and Jan again, I could see Dillashaw Aldo being the co-main event or a featured bout on the fight card. And if by some incident, some accident, one gets hurt, now you just shuffle TJ into the title
right.
fight. Right? So
yeah.
I can see a path where that type of things happen. But look, honestly, it's just very exciting because for a weight class, a small weight class where there's not always that much excitement.
It's explosion.
Right now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
It's explosion.
It's such a great weight class.
Right. And then
especially
that's the thing.
Jose Aldo.
Exactly.
With Jose Aldo winning.
Right.
And not being a stepping stone.
Exactly. With Jose Aldo now making himself someone who is in championship contention, I think it only raises the caliber of the bantamweights at 135. But from one Brazilian champion and great to probably the greatest Brazilian champion, and I'm going to say it again, the greatest DC, no matter what you try to say. Now, we have nothing but respect.
Week, hey, stop. Now, I'm not trying to hate on Amanda, but a couple weeks ago, you were saying how Anderson Silva was the greatest Brazilian champion of all time.
Wow.
But you see how you and Johnny come lately, right?
Well, listen, at least I didn't go from liking the Houston Rockets to the Milwaukee Bucks. But right now, right here, man, we have the GOAT. Two division champ, Amanda Nunes, the greatest woman mixed martial artist of all time. Let's welcome Amanda.
This is a real question for you, DC. This is a real question. Why do you hate Amanda Nunes?
Juliana Peña is a dog, man. She is going to be the toughest bantamweight fight Amanda has had in a really long time.
I'm going to play that for...
Don't you dare play that for Amanda. Don't you dare try to make it seem like Amanda's gonna lose. No.
When it was Juliana Peña, you were saying she was gonna beat Amanda Nunes. Now all of a sudden, Kayla Harrison is gonna beat Amanda Nunes.
I see what you're doing here.
So we just shouldn't watch the fight? Ryan, I'm not saying if she fights Kayla Harrison, we just shouldn't watch it.
No, I'm not saying no.
You sound scared, DC.
I'm a bit scared of Amanda Nunes. I am a bit scared of Amanda Nunes, if I'm being honest. No matter what you're trying to accomplish at work, it takes a team coming together to make it happen. Teams come in all shapes and sizes, but they aren't always on the same page. Tools and processes often hold teams back by limiting visibility and the flow of information to make good decisions. Jira Service Management from Atlassian empowers IT teams to work together to deliver a great service experience at high velocity. Jira Service Management helps teams of all sizes work together to deliver great service experience. IT, development, and business teams can use Jira Service Management to manage requests and respond to changes at lightning speed. Teams can customize service portals and workflows to support customer requests at scale. Through a single, collaborative solution, teams have better visibility into the work of others and information flows more freely. Development and operation teams can manage changes with confidence. Jira Service Management empowers teams and empower teams deliver great service experiences. Learn more at Atlassian.com/Jira Service Management. That's Atlassian.com/Jira Service Management. Atlassian.com/Jira Service Management.
And listen, look who's here.
We're now joined by the greatest and most dominant female athlete of all time, Amanda Nunes. Champ, I never said all that. That was some very carefully edited videos. The videos were edited carefully to make it seem as though I said all those things.
DC, you broke my heart.
Thank you, Amanda.
You broke my heart, DC.
Damn. I mean, come on. Champ, I'm out here trying to, hey, Champ, I'm out here just trying to line your pockets. No. I'm just out here trying to line your pockets with money.
Amanda,
this dude Ryan Clark trying to turn us into enemies.
Amanda, welcome to the show. It is so exciting to have the GOAT. As you can see from the video you just watched, Amanda, I constantly have your back. Every time DC gets to pick a fight that you're in, he's like, Amanda should be scared. This woman's all this. This woman's all that.
This dude's lying again.
So leading up to your fight this weekend, Amanda, what are you most excited about showing again when you step into the octagon?
Honestly, I'm very excited, you know, go back to 135 for so long and I've been there before. And man, I always say that, but like I've been improved so much.
Yeah.
You know, I'm almost 34 years old. So every time like I step in the gym, I learn something, you know, things just come together even better. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna say once again, I'm better than ever. Honestly, like everything like is been getting the place. So my body like responded pretty well, the diet. And like I'm just like really very, 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 very good. Feel very good right now.
Amanda, is there anything unique about this challenge? I mean, you fought everybody, you've beaten everybody, and you've beaten them dominantly. But when you look at Juliana Pena, mm-hmm. is there anything unique about the challenge that you're going to see on Saturday night?
Honestly, just the talk. Honestly. nobody talk like Juliana. Mm-hmm. I never fight. Nobody's talk like her. But honestly, like, it's not getting me wrong. You know, she's tough, you know. But, like, she's the only one that talks so much like that.
Well, listen, every time we see you step in the fight, you always bring out your A game, no matter who it is. If you're fighting, if it's Misha Tate, if it's Holly Holm, if it's anybody who steps in there, Valentina Shevchenko. In this fight with Juliana Pena talking the way that she talks, do you want to shut her up a little bit more violently or quicker than you have some of your other opponents because she's trash talking a little bit?
Honestly, like, every time we step in the cage, we really think about finishing somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what, if they talk, you know, they've been quiet. So with Julian, it's not different, you know. Every time that I step in the cage, I want to really win it, prove a point, you know. I'm the better fighter here. I'm the best. So with Julian, like, I think it's going to be the same, you know. I feel like any moment in this fight, I can finish her, you know. So I feel like she's going to give me all the moments that I want to knock her out or to finish her, you know? I feel like if she played the wrestling game with me, I know that next is all there, you know? She have that huge weakness. It's like that neck, and I will get that neck. And if she really show up, like pressure me, like right. she say she's going to do, I will knock her out. So it's like everything
that.
Is covered. I'm just gonna wait for the moment.
Amanda, so you said that if she pressures you. Now, this is something that Charles Oliveira is also dealing with, another Brazilian champion we have. People are calling back to a time where he would maybe not fight as well as he got fatigued.
Mm-hmm.
You think that's what Juliana's kind of holding on to? Because for a while, it was always like, can Amanda cardio hold up? Can it hold up? Can it hold up? Obviously, it's showing that it holds up. But is she looking so far back to a fight from years prior that's giving her confidence to think and want this fight as badly as she wants? Is she reaching, is essentially what I'm asking.
Yeah, DC, I feel like she has to find something, you know, because she knows she's going to have a hard time with me. She has to find something to at least, like, hold on and then, think about if she's going to beat me with a mistake that I already fixed it for a long time ago, you know? And all
does it get annoying, though, Amanda? Does it get annoying, though, that people still question whether or not the cardio is going to hold up?
Actually, it's not getting annoying because I like when they think like that, you know?
Right.
They focus so much on that, and then when they step in front of me and see, they get so uncomfortable and realizing that moment they were wrong. So I feel like she hold on to that is even better for me.
You know, when you look at this fight and Juliana Pena really being the challenger that she is, I just need you to do me a favor, and I'm going to ask for this. If you come out and she pressures you and you knock her out, just remember, I want you to look at the outside of the octagon, find Daniel Cormier.
Oh, go, my God.
Amanda, I want you to find Daniel Cormier, and you point to him and you say, RC was right. For supporting me this entire time, for always saying I'm the GOAT, for saying that I'm untouchable, you point to DC and you say RC is right. But he's talked about kind of what some of the people point to as weaknesses you may have from past fights. Do you think, you say you're getting better, which is crazy to me because every time I watch you, you look more and more dominant. Coming into this fight, what things do you think you have gotten better that people haven't gotten an opportunity to see you do already?
Honestly, like, I like to watch my fights a lot. You know, I like to look back, you know, I put myself in the position as my opponent, you know, how I can beat Amanda. So, and I watch, and then I see a couple things that I have to fix and then go to the gym and then fix, you know, that thing. I feel like I really watch all the mistakes that I have and then fix it for the next. So for make sure they, you know, everything's work on and everything's is better. So
I
cannot tell you guys. I cannot tell you guys because of course she might watch these or whatever, and then she's gonna know. You know what I mean? I cannot give like that present to her. So, but like I make sure I fix it all those holes that I have, and yeah, like I'm ready to go, DC. Nobody's gonna take this from me. I'm hungry.
Yeah,
I'm a lioness.
Yes. Hear that, huh, DC? Hey, Tim, even so, you, DC, you won't take it from me either.
Hey, come on, man. I'm going to say this right now. Me and Amanda have been rocking since Strikeforce, so you'll never build a wedge between us. But, champ, let me ask you this last question. Champ, now with your dominance in two weight classes, it becomes historical. So now everything is in historical terms whenever Amanda Nunes walks out to the octagon. And you've said on many occasions, you want to build a legacy that will never be touched. What does a victory over Juliana do for that legacy when you've beaten just about anybody you've ever fought, and you have beaten a who's who of names in female mixed martial arts? What does this one do for the legacy of Amanda Nunes?
I feel like this one is going to take me to that level, to beat that number, you know, the most title defense in the history in the UFC. And I want to get there. I work hard, you know, and this one is the next one for sure. I'm going to get that victory and I'm work to beat that number.
Champ, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time. Listen, you are the greatest female fighter of all time.
Absolutely.
And we are all honored and privileged to be able to watch you perform. Good luck this weekend. Enjoy yourself. And I can't wait to see you in Vegas, Amanda.
Good luck, Amanda.
Thank you, guys. Awesome talk to you guys. See you soon.
That was the double champ, the GOAT, the greatest fighter of all time. Listen, I'm still doing this every time I talk to Amanda Nunes because I hold her up on the Mount Olympus of fighting. But Ryan, when you talk to Amanda Nunes, the most dominant female athlete of all time, at least in my opinion, it got me thinking. For this week's list, let's list the top five female athletes or most dominant female athletes of all time. And Ryan Clark, I make one plea to you. Please do not cheat. It's only five. Five people. That's it. Just five most dominant female athletes of all time. My friend, the floor is yours.
So is this what it's like when someone gives you a taste of your own medicine? You start to whine and cry to the official. So you hit a guy low, you poke a guy in the eye, and then he does it to you and you complain. Hey, look, Herb Dean. Herb Dean, look what he did to me.
Ryan, I'm on the dude of the pile at the football game squeezing your side.
Right.
The moment somebody squeezed my side, yeah. I'm like, hey, man, dude, throw the flag. Yeah. Throw
all right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to start at number five. Number five for me is Candace Parker, right? You think about Candace Parker, right? Player of the year in college, rookie of the year, MVP, WNBA. And this past year, she goes back home to the Chicago Sky and wins a championship. For all that she's done on the court, she's also just as amazing off the court, whether it's TV, community service. We've done panels together in the offseason through the 2020 social justice movement. I think Candace Parker is the greatest basketball player as a female ever. On top of that, she's one of the greatest basketball players in the history of the game and first woman to get her own signature shoe. Don't forget that, DC. Okay. Own signature shoe that you probably can't fit because you're too short. All right?
That's a great pick.
Okay, then we go. Number two, I'm going Amanda Nunes. For all the reasons...
Wait. Number four?
Yes, number four, DC. The most dominant... Oh, you got Amanda. It's a top five. She's the most dominant female fighter of all time. If I believe that Amanda Nunes, when you look at the list of people she's beaten Ronda Rousey, she's beating Valentina Shevchenko twice, right? She beats Cyborg in explosive and dominant fashion. Amanda Nunes is the greatest female fighter of all time. I think before it's done, we're going to have to start counting her in the greatest fighter of all time. At number three, I'm going Katie Ledecky, 7 gold medals in the Olympics, 15 world championships, the most of any female swimmer, and she's still going. Just had another dominant summer in the Olympics. She's been one of the greatest female swimmers of all time. She's one of the greatest swimmers of all time, period, for the USA. And I'm going Katie Ledecky at three. At number two, I'm going Simone Biles. I'm going to leave it at this. When they start naming moves after you, you are the greatest to do it. Period. When they start giving you or taking off points because you're making up your own moves and they don't even know how the hell to score it, that means you're too darn good. That means you are out of this world. You are out of sight. They ain't never seen nothing like you. And you are so dominant that it's turned from love to hate. That's Simone Biles. And at number one, I don't even know why this is a question. It's Serena Williams, bro. Serena Williams might not only be the most dominant female athlete of all time, she may be the most dominant athlete, period, of all time. We're talking about an individual sport. And this is not even to add what her and her sister Venus have done in doubles. Serena Williams has revolutionized what we thought about tennis, the way your body type could be, the way you dress, the way you dominate, the type of power and force that you could play with. She's a dominant force, both on the, whether they're playing on, you know, if, whether it's clay, whether it's grass, it does not matter. Serena Williams is the best to ever do it.
Oh, my goodness. That's a pretty good list, Ryan Clark. That's a pretty good list, Ryan Clark.
I feel like you're about to hate.
I'm not going to hate. It's actually really good. It was very well thought of. So I'll start mine. At number five, Misty May and Kerry Walsh.
Ryan Clark,
these two women won the Olympics in 4, 8, and 12. Ryan, they lost a set. And it was a story.
Now you're
right. They lost one set. And it was a story. We're talking about dominance.
Hey, DC.
We're talking about dominance. Yes.
That's two people. Just keep going, though.
No. It's one. It's one.
It's two people,
because
DC.
They play as a team. It's two people that play as a team.
We didn't ask for the best female duos.
But no. This is actually, it would have been unfair to not list them because they play as a team. But the reality is,
DC.
That actually makes it harder. That actually makes it harder because you got to be so in sync that you can become as dominant as these two women became in beach volleyball. And I got to be honest, it was during my Olympic run, so I got to see it live, Ryan. So I guess my eyes make me hold them in high. Number four. Now, but they are so dominant. At number four, I got Simone Biles. Biles has 32 World and Olympic Championships on top of everything else that you said, Ryan. Like, that's insanity. I think that she is as good of a gymnast as we've ever seen and that we will ever see. And she's the greatest of all time. So she goes to number four. Number three, honestly, Ryan, I think that Venus Williams, I think that we kind of forget about Venus because she almost lives in the shadow of her sister. I think that we got to remember what Venus did over the course of her career. She was easily one of the greatest tennis athletes of all time, and she came first. She came before Serena. And if not for Serena surpassing what she had done in the, over the course of her career, she would have gone down as maybe the greatest female tennis player of all time, knowing that they've been so many phenomenal female tennis players before her. Whereas Serena was a little thicker, Venus was a little longer, lean, going just really controlling the court at number two for all the reasons you gave for your number one. I got Serena Williams. I mean, the dominance that she displayed at the peak of her career, and even today, to be able to compete at the level that she competes at after having children, after starting a whole nother life and still being competitive, Serena Williams is number two. But for me, number one is Amanda Nunes. Bro, you don't dominate two weight classes in fighting, effortlessly going between those weights and beating the very best that the world has to offer, especially in the fashion that she is beating them. The only competitive fights have been Valentina Shevchenko, who is honestly one beat of her. So the only person that can even like sniff, hold a candle to you is the greatest at 125. So if Amanda could make 125, we're talking about a woman, Ryan, that could be the champ at 45, 35, and 25. What's more dominant than that? You dominate the entire sport of mixed martial arts. So for me, at number one, it's Amanda Nunes, my friend. And I truly believe that we have some same people on there, but I believe that I got the better list.
Well, DC, once again, you cheated. And I think
that's not cheating.
That's what it came down to.
Let's ask Corporate Jake, can you please clarify in this one?
We don't have to ask Corporate Jake. Like, I know exactly. I know exactly. DC, you did too. I think your list is great, though. This is one of those lists, man, to be honest. Like, you can't be wrong, though.
You know what I mean? You're not.
You know, when you pick.
We're not saying, no, neither one of us is wrong.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't be wrong. This is, like I think your list is great. To have Amanda Nunes one for all of the reasons you said, you know, like, that's a great argument. But I think that's what's great and what's starting to be amazing about female sports, though, right? Like, we're getting to a point to where we're starting to understand how athletic they are, how much adversity they deal with, as opposed to what some men do at times. And I think that it's amazing to see what these women have been able to accomplish. And I thought it was super cool, and people won't get to see it, is you asking Amanda if the baby was there. You know, and to be able to raise a family and do all of those things and yet still be one of the greatest in the world at what you do. Same with Serena coming back after having her baby. Like, I think all of those things added to what these women accomplish in their field of sport or in their field of endeavor is also another reason why they're top five most dominant females in the world.
And for so long, women wanted to be viewed in the same, or held in the same regard that men were held in terms of their athletics. And I think today, more than ever, the women are getting the credit that they so rightfully deserve, not only from athletics, but the things that they do outside. Ryan, you spoke to Candace Parker and about her involvement with trying to help during 2020, when everything seemed to be flipping upside down, to be a voice for a lot of different people. You know, the work that Amanda does outside of the octagon, Serena and Venus, Simone Biles, raising awareness to the anxiety and everything that that played into her not being able to compete, mental health. It's like so many of the biggest issues in the world today are being pushed to the forefront by these tremendous athletes.
Absolutely.
And it's great that they are getting the credit that they so rightfully deserve. But as you said, there is no wrong list when you're listing these phenomenal women that are just leading and honestly being role models for young women all around the world. Because you listed, Ryan, we listed four Americans and a Brazilian lady, a Brazilian woman, right? So it's all around the world that you can look up to these strong women that are role models for the next generation of female athletes.
Like, you really think about it, the only thing that was wrong with either of the lists was that you used two people again.
But I didn't, like, it's like, I just, that's my only gripe.
Layout, DC.
RC, that's my only gripe, is that, and I hate that you paint me this way. I thought that was honest. They should have told me when I sent it in that it was not okay.
Man, layout, man.
UFC 269 is this Saturday, live from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Dustin Poirier challenges Charles Oliveira. Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. It is going to be a phenomenal fight night from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas. And now it's time for one round with the Diamond of Acadiana, Dustin Poirier. Dustin, how's life from the hills of Lafayette with that new mansion that you just built? I mean, this boy right here is living on top of the world right now. Talk to me, DP. Come on.
Look, the king needs a throne, man, and we had to set it up right in Lafayette.
My man.
Hey, what's up, Dustin, man? I still live in the boot, too, man. I'm out in Baton Rouge. Listen, you had the big fights this year, right? And that's how we build these palatial estates in Louisiana. D.C., he got all bougie on his DP. He moved out to Cali, so his house got to be a little bit smaller than ours, man.
Oh, my goodness. Boy, so y'all house-shaming me now. So now y'all house-shaming me. Okay.
We area
Dustin.
Code shaming you, man.
Area code, dog. You know what Dustin, it is. You got too on, big Dustin. For us.
Dustin, don't be like everybody else inside with this dude. Like, this is crazy. Now, DP, listen.
Everybody else in Louisiana, yeah.
DP, listen. The big fights are fun. Mm-hmm. The big fights are fun. But ultimately, it's about the championship. And you finally get an opportunity to once again become the undisputed lightweight champion of the world. How good does it feel to finally be on this moment?
It feels great, man. It's a special week. I feel great. I feel in the moment. I'm just enjoying the ride, man, and enjoying the journey. I've worked so hard to put myself in this position to even have this chance to call myself a world champion.
You know what? You fought your way back to this position, but you obviously had a chance early on this year where you could have fought Charles Oliveira for the championship. You had a fight with Conor McGregor, went out there and absolutely dominated. And at that point, I said on this show, I thought you were the best 155-pounder in the world. You get an opportunity to go out and show that against someone who's had not only just a good career, but a great career and has been on an insane win streak leading into this fight. What makes you confident that you can walk out of the octagon as the undisputed champion this weekend?
Because I know I can beat anybody in the world. Mm-hmm. I just have to be able to compete at my ability. If I compete at what I'm capable of, I'm the world champion. There's no doubt in my mind.
You know, Dustin, and when we talk about things outside of the public, you know, you talk about the evolution in the of your career and your life. And we talk about the mentality from day one to today. Speak a little bit of how much you have changed up top and how much you take from those last two fights as you are about to challenge for the championship.
Man, DC, you know how it is. Just going through the motions of a fight week of that magnitude. The training camps, the media, the grinder of the all the media outlets, and just beating that same drum, showing up to the gym every day, putting in the work, putting in the sweat equity, going back home, and then having a big fight like that. It just, that's all experience, you know. I feel so comfortable and so calm this week here in Vegas, getting ready for this. Checked in with the UFC this morning, been doing interviews today. It just feels like where I'm supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
You know, we saw you in this same position against Khabib Nurmagomedov years ago. And now you're getting that opportunity again to put yourself in the list of people that really makes you truly one of the greatest mixed martial artists of all time. Earlier, you talked about the journey. And, you know, football seasons are different than what you guys do. You know, we go to training camp. We get 16 weeks, 17 weeks to do what we need to do. You're speaking about a moment. What's the moment like when you do walk into the octagon to face a champion, to face somebody else who's one of the world's greatest? And how do you calm yourself and focus on the task at hand?
That's it, man. I feel like my whole career has been times where I felt in the moment, times where I felt like I was looking in, you know, from the outside.
Right.
And for me to just grab a hold of the reins and be in control of what's going on around me, I think is an accumulation of experience over the years.
Yeah.
You know, like the last two fights with Conor, I really felt like myself out there. Mm-hmm. I'm just comfortable with who I see in the mirror. I think that's it.
You know, I saw it in the McGregor fight, right? Yeah. The first fight, you kind of were like, I got you. And then the second fight, you started smiling. And then he started wrestling with you after you started getting a hold of him. Now that confidence that, look, we all have insecurities going into an octagon to fight. And, you know, we've spoken about these things. But those moments like that those moments where you feel like completely within yourself, they carry you in the next moments. When you look at Charles Oliveira, how do you apply those lessons, Dustin, to a guy that has tremendous power with his hands and also is as good as anybody we've seen in the octagon when the fight hits the floor?
Yeah.
Better than anybody we've seen in the octagon, if we're going off of numbers.
Right. The best.
The best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to make this my fight. I need to make Charles react to what I'm doing. And I'm going to show you Saturday night, man. I've been training for this moment my whole life. It's 25 minutes. I was saying 25 minutes to make life fair. Well, this moment I have here to be called the world champion, to be the best in the world at 155 pounds, it's 25 minutes till infinity. Because once you do that, you submit your name as a champion for eternity. Once a champion, always a champion. That's the way I'm looking at this.
No,
this is an opportunity.
Yeah, hey, DP, absolutely. It's once a champion, always a champion, because that's all DC ever talks about. He hangs it over my head constantly, bro, that I don't have a championship belt. I heard you say that if anybody stands in there, if Charles Oliveira is trying to stand in there with you for five rounds, eventually you'll knock him out. When you think about your plan and the way you want to focus on this fight, are there things that he does as a fighter, though, that you feel like you need to stay away from in order to impose your will on him?
He does a lot of great things. Throws big power shots.
Mm-hmm.
He has a good clean left hook, good long cross, big knees.
Yeah.
Good front kicks. And obviously his jiu-jitsu is dangerous everywhere. So he does a lot of good things, you know, and he's a very dangerous fighter. That's the thing. We're both finishers. Yeah. We're not going out there trying to jab and win rounds.
Exactly.
And jab and win the round. We're trying to finish each other, so the fans are in for a treat,
Dustin,
when it comes to that.
And so I have a question as a fan, right? This is a fan question. When I'm watching Charles Oliveira and we're talking about a guy with the most submissions in UFC and he's in the first round with Michael Chandler, Michael Chandler's beating him, and then he comes out the second round, he gets the quick left, puts him to sleep, fights over. And then I watch Michael Chandler fight Justin Gaethje, someone who you had a classic bout with, and Michael Chandler standing up to those punches and taking all that damage from Justin Gaethje, who's put people to sleep. Was it surprising to you that Charles Oliveira, a guy who is so known for his ground game, to possess that type of power against a fighter like Chandler? And is that something that excites you when you think about the stand-up game matching your power against his?
You know, it's not a measuring contest like that. I'm not looking to stand in the pocket and see who punches harder. I'm trying to move and be the matador, make him miss and make him pay. Anybody can be put away. That was a great shot he landed.
Right.
Chandler was moving in forward with all of his weight. It was just perfect timing.
Mm-hmm.
Great technique. I don't really play the MMA math. I don't go back and watch fights and say, well, this guy was durable in this fight.
Right.
I don't do all that.
You know, Dustin, when this fight, and as I've said on record, you're the best lightweight in the world. I've said it time and time again. But then as this fight is announced, people start talking about Charles Oliveira as it's almost a point that's already done. Dustin Poirier is the best. He's going to beat him. Charles Oliveira seems to be getting overlooked in this, but as you look deeper into the matchup, it's a very competitive fight. How do you make sure that you don't start to pay attention to all those outside voices that are saying that this is not the best matchup for him when he matches up with a Dustin Poirier?
Because I'm not a dummy, DC. I've been fighting too long. I've been fighting too long. I don't look past anybody. You know, even if the guy was coming off of a 3-fight losing skid, I wouldn't look past him. Everybody's dangerous. We got 4-ounce gloves. This guy's one of the best in the world at finishing guys with submissions. So this is a very, very dangerous guy who's probably walking in here with the most confidence we've ever seen him. He's got all the experience.
Yeah.
Now he's walking in as a world champion. This is a dangerous man.
I saw this dude in Vegas, Dustin, when you guys were fighting and Conor, and Ryan was there. He carries a swag about him. Like you said, you speak to his confidence. Whereas you got that nice swag, that dude's carrying that type of swag himself as he goes into the fight on Saturday.
Man, not only swag, a beautiful set of teeth. I mean, incredible mouth.
Hey, I was thinking the same thing when I looked at the picture. I'm like, that boy teeth white as hell.
Wow. That's how they do it in Brazil. Now, DP, listen. You got that nice Acadiana flag on your head. You know what I'm saying? You know how we do. You know, I'll laugh yet. Now, DP, we make lists here, me, Ryan Clark, every single week.
And he cheats
so
too,
this
DP.
List, right? I'm not going to cheat this time. But this list, we're going to call it This Is So Louisiana. since we got three Louisiana boys on here. So what I want from you, Dustin, are your three best Louisiana foods as you're dieting, as you're getting ready for the fight. What does Dustin Poirier have on Sunday when he hits back to Louisiana? Give me those three, Dustin. Those three things that you got to have, Louisiana cuisine.
DC, Christmas is coming up. I do gumbo every December.
Yes, sir.
Everybody's coming to the crib. Okay. I'm doing gumbo, potato salad. That's at the top when I get back
home. That's together. Gumbo and potato salad is one.
That's one meal. That's one meal.
I mean, I don't mix my gumbo and potato salad. My wife does, but I understand what you're saying. So we'll do. Let's see. You know I got to hit up Dino's Pizza, man. I've been missing my pizza.
Okay. Dino's.
Yeah, we got some Boudin pizza over there. Louisiana.
Boudin pizza. That's the Louisiana right
Tim,
there.
You know, Tim and them do their thing. You know, Tim and them do their thing.
Yep. And let me see. Three. I'm going to the Best Stop and getting Boudin, man. Getting links of Boudin.
Okay.
You Dustin, know? I was watching you, though, man, and you were talking. You say you didn't get a Thanksgiving. Right, you were about to drink your morning shake. You were gonna get it with your breakfast, but you was talking about pies and desserts. So when you get to the crib, what's the dessert gonna be though? We see what your food is. What dessert you get?
I'm not a big dessert guy. Okay. But every Thanksgiving, that's when I really get down with dessert, pies and stuff. But I missed it this time, so I'm bringing the pies to Christmas. You know, I don't know. I'm trying to get me a pumpkin pie, apple pie.
Okay.
Damn, I'm doing it all, man.
My man, Dustin. Here you go for me. I'm just traditional, right? Give me the gumbo, give me the red beans and rice, and I need some rice dressing. I mean, rice dressing for me is the best. Those three. I like the gumbo. I don't really mess with jambalaya all that much. Right. I don't eat shrimp. I don't eat crawfish etouffee. I don't eat none of that. I like gumbo.
What?
Give me some red beans and rice, and give me some rice dressing, man. Give me those three, and I'm good.
That's why you turkey now.
If the red beans don't have cornbread with it, I'm not in.
100%. See, Dustin.
Bro, stop, Ryan. Stop before you go. Hey, Dustin. Ryan gonna give you all kind of fancy stuff because you know that NFL money a little different.
Why don't you start that?
NFL money.
Don't
a
you start
different.
That,
Ryan? Let's get you.
Don't you start that? Hey, off the top, number one's gumbo, right? Off the top, you gotta go with gumbo. Number one, number two, I'm gonna get me some charbroiled oysters.
I slipped my mind.
See, DP with me too. That's because we still live in Louisiana and our money stretched. DC, we didn't move away and get bougie, right? And then at number three, I'm staying traditional. I'm going jambalaya, bro.
You like the jambalaya?
I love jambalaya, bro. Come on, DC.
That's one I can do. Dustin,
I love it too.
Ryan, the jambalaya is one I can do without, especially if I got to choose, right? I'm not choosing jambalaya. Listen. It's been great list. Dustin, the food going to be fantastic when you get home. But before then, you got something
handle
to accomplish.
Your business, bro.
Hey, my man, good luck this weekend. I can't wait to call the fight, my brother. And hey, ladies and gentlemen, Saturday night's a big bad Cajun boy walking to the octagon
yes,
right
is.
There. Dustin, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us, man. We appreciate you, baby.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you, guys. And even though we're struggling, it's still who that.
it's always who that. Hey, Dustin,
always. I
Dustin,
got you.
Dustin. We wanted to do favorite sports teams, but they wouldn't let me because they know Ryan wouldn't say the Saints.
I sure
Ryan
ain't.
Wouldn't say the
Good luck, hey, champ.
Hey, thank you, bro.
Hey, Ryan, that was the diamond, Dustin Poirier. They say diamonds are forever, and so is Dustin Poirier. But now it's time to tap.
Let's get it.
It's time to tap in or tap out. Corporate Jake, let's go.
On Monday, Jake Paul announced that Tommy Fury withdrew from their fight due to injury, and stepping in as a replacement is none other than Tyron Woodley. So, RC, tap in or tap out on this Paul-Woodley rematch?
I tap out. I don't want to see it again. The first time wasn't necessarily exciting. I think Tyron had, you know, the one moment where he knocks Jake into the ropes and... I don't even know if I was going to tap in on seeing Tommy Fury, to be honest with you, but at least it was a new storyline. We getting tattoos. Are we going to get tattoos on toes now? Is that going to be the new move? I tap all the way out, DC. You can do what you want. I'm out on it.
I'm tapping in, RC. I'm tapping in because I bought it last time. I'm going to buy it again hoping that Tyron Woodley lets his hands go. I know. I'm like the guy that keeps betting on the horse that has 10-1 odds to win. But I gotta go with the world champion, and I'm tapping in to go watch Tyron finally do what Tyron is supposed to do. Hey, Corporate Jake.
Watch it on your phone and screen grab it and send it to me if he knocks him out.
He gonna knock you out. I think he gonna knock you out, Ryan. He gonna knock you out this time.
All right, Saturday night, former bantamweight champion Cody Garbrandt makes his flyweight debut against Kai Kara France. DC, tap in or tap out that Cody will make 125 his permanent weight class?
I tap out. I think that Cody may win this fight at 125 this weekend. I don't know. I will not make a prediction. I can't. But it'll be very difficult for him to continue to make this weight over and over and over again. And like I've said before, when you're changing weight classes, obviously something's going wrong in the weight class before. Yeah. So if he doesn't find instant success, I don't think he'll continue to do it.
Yeah, I'm tapping out on him finding a home here. Whenever I listen to DC talk about cutting weight and you watch some of these fighters and what they have to go to cut this type of weight, and also the fact that he's aging. And as you get up in age, it gets harder to cut that weight. It's easier to add it. If he doesn't win in explosive fashion here and feel good at 125 right away, I don't believe he makes his home here.
Corporate Jake.
One last one. Legend Dominic Cruz steps into the octagon once again at UFC 269 Saturday night against a tough opponent in Pedro Munhoz. RC, tap in or tap out that this is a win or retire bout for Dominic Cruz?
I tap in on that. I tap in on it because he's a guy who is a former champion. You know, he's a guy who has someone like Sean O'Malley talking stuff about him because of where he's fighting. And I think Dominic Cruz sometimes, the greatest ones need to see themselves not be what they were anymore or not have the opportunity to be a champion. And once Dominic Cruz remembers that or realizes that, I believe he's done. If he doesn't win this fight, this will be his last.
I tap out, RC. I tap out on Dominic Cruz being in a win or retire situation because I know he's too thorough, mm-hmm. right? And I know the battles that he's had to go through to get here. You remember, he may be a little bit older now, but Dominic Cruz missed 4 or 5 years due to injury
yes.
right in the heart of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So I know all the faith that he had to have in order to stay the course,
right.
to stay committed to getting back to the octagon. So I don't believe that if he loses, he would walk away from the game. I think he might have to readjust some things. Mm-hmm. I think the mentality might change. I'm not sure, but I don't believe that it'll be the end of Dominic Cruz if he doesn't win this weekend. He's too competitive and he's too thorough in his preparation. RC, that was a good show, man.
But that was a good show, man. Listen,
happy to have you back.
Hey, you got to hate on Amanda a little bit more. Dustin got to talk to us about some food, and we kind of area code shamed you a little bit because you're too bougie to hang with the Louisiana boys, man. But I'm glad to be back, bro. I missed you. I was a little jealous that you did the show without me. I was hoping we'd stand together and you would say, no RC, then there's no DC. But you know what? What can I expect from the two-division champ, man, but to show up for the team when they need him?
Ryan, when you eat those soft shelled oysters and the wounds are self-inflicted, like when the wounds are self-inflicted, how do you expect me to jump on the sword for you?
That wasn't why I was sick, DC. DC, that wasn't why I was sick.
You ate the oysters.
DC, that wasn't why I was sick. My daughter was sick, then my wife got sick, and she gave it to me, bro. Don't do that. It wasn't about being bougie and rich. We love you. I'm RC. That's DC. His initials come first because he's the two-time champ.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.